For you or for people close to you, what is a place that is tied to spiritual experiences or memories of connection with God? Welcome to The Good Word. I'm Jody Washburn, host and study guide author for this 13-week series on the Book of Psalms. Joining me in conversation are Tiago Heiss and Matilda Fry, both professors in the School of Theology. You know, Matilda, earlier in this series, you talked about the importance of place. And in a way, we could say that's a thread that runs through basically every human's spirituality or, you know, spiritual life. And when you mentioned it earlier in the quarter, I immediately thought of the book Dakota, A Spiritual Geography, where Kathleen Norris really like wrestles with this interplay between our spiritual journey and geography. But I wonder for you or people who, you know well, what are some places that are tied to either a sense of connection with the divine or, you know, to more broadly, you know, spiritual experiences?
I just remember my frustration going to Israel for the first time. I was always, I think growing up, loving like music and poetry and art. I've always, you build up this romanticism toward specific places that you've heard about all your life. So I said, man, when I get to Jerusalem, I'm going to have a playlist. I'm going to walk through these old streets and try to feel. It was actually the opposite when I got there. I just had this, I saw a lot of yelling, a lot of people, a lot of buying and selling. And I was like the whole romanticism that I had built all my life. It was destroyed. So I guess what I'm trying to say is I've always struggled with the idealization of places that I can go to searching for something. And when I do think of the places where they were meaningful to me, it's precisely the ones that you're not looking for. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not preparing yourself to. Those are the places. So I can think of like in between places that were meaningful to me. That when I go back, I remember, it's like, wow, it was special to be here that one time and like a dorm room in Argentina where it's like there's not a holy place or a sacred place. There's nothing there, but it was meaningful to me at that time. Or to my grandparents' house where my grandfather used to study his Bible. I mean, it's not a holy place, but the smell and the memories. I mean, so I think I'm more sort of tied to these in-between places, and I just wanted to point the frustration because I didn't prepare for it, but it was the first thing that came to my mind of the places that I thought were going to be like these high points of my spiritual life were really not it.
You're not going to be going out and organizing pilgrimages full-time, I
take. I mean, I like the feel of being in the place, you know, of walking in these, sort of what we're doing in Psalms. These are meeting places, right?
Yes.
I mean, thousands and thousands of people have been there praying these prayers, singing these songs, experiencing these feelings. So when we actually go to the places, I do have that sense there. I was just troubled. I guess the enemy here is not the place or the experience. It's just my romanticism.
It was
on me. So I think I grew out of that to an extent. And now I think I'm just open to whatever happens. May it be a pilgrimage or may it be, you know, the awareness in between places that, you know, we should always. I mean, you see it in the Bible too, like Moses in the burning bush. I mean, it's not, it just happens, you know, in the middle of mundane work on a Wednesday. Mm-hmm. That's what Exodus says, right? On a Wednesday, he went up a mountain.
every day.
I like that. And the Bible is filled with, I mean, Jesus, I mean, it's always there. The beauty, the beautiful, deep spiritual connections happen, I mean, especially in the Gospels, outside of Jerusalem most of the time. It's just in between places, you know, he touches, he meets, he sees. And so I don't know. I just expressed a bunch of things there, but I'll just lay it out as they came.
And I wonder if it can be both. And I'm thinking the lesson guide that we are, you know, kind of using as a jumping off point for our conversations throughout all 13 weeks drew extensively on the collection of poems called the Psalms of Ascent, Psalm 120 to 134. And, you know, some people think that these are psalms that were connected in the collective memory with the experience of going to Jerusalem. But Your description of the places in between, you know, many of these short little poems, they memorialize people's experiences en route.
Mm-hmm.
They're not all about the arrival. There are poems that talk about like the wonder of crossing the threshold. Mm-hmm. Jerusalem, I have entered your gate. Mm-hmm. But there are a lot of these little poems that really like name the sacred in the journey.
Yeah.
I believe the psalms of ascent that you spoke about are psalms that are in expectation. They are... It is the wish, it is the desire, the longing for it to come. In the same psalms, you have the journey, and I love the journey. I believe the stories of the Hebrew Bible are especially about the journeys of people, and they are not fixed in a place; they go from place to place. And that is why I love Abraham's story so much, because he does not have, a place where he, sets up everything and now we have arrived. It's an experience of life that continues. It's not stuck. It's never stuck. It changes. It has ups and downs. And that is why the story is interesting. By the way, if Abraham had arrived in the promised land, we would not have that many chapters.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
About him. So the Psalms are about the stories of journey with a desire and a longing for an end to that traveling experience. But has it come? It has not.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I mean, there's something to be said about law being given in the desert. Nobody knows where. I know it's the debate or the people wondering. There's a sense, I think, in the Hebrew Bible and also in the New Testament that it's not necessarily the place itself, but this opening for it to be sort of a universal thing, that whatever God is doing specifically here, it's not just for this people and not just in this location. I mean, the law was not given in Jerusalem. The sanctuary initially was not in the town. It was in movement. It was in route. So that it's not just about Israel, but it's
a portable tent.
Yeah.
You should easily be able to like take it down and go.
And go.
Right.
So, I mean, I read once, I think it was, it's in the desert because the desert is no one's land. And if it's no one's land, it's everyone's land. Meaning all that God has revealed to Israel there in that route applies to. So I think there's something beautiful about that, about this radical opening to everyone. And I think Jesus brings it up in a very important dialogue with a woman who we know as the woman at the well, right? This unnamed woman there, where he says that if it was all about place, Jesus would have had that opportunity right there to say, yes, it is Jerusalem. So go up, when she's talking about worship and all these things. But no, it's not on your mountain, and it's not in that mountain. There's something in between mountains that happens in spirit and truth that God desires and God sees and God wants. So, I don't know. I've always loved that idea that Matilda just fleshed out, this desert, this movement, this going, this journey, and that God is there.
And the psalm that is about here, part of it, 122, starts with, I was glad when they say, let's go. Right?
Journey.
Yes.
That's it.
And then when they are standing, it's a participle. It is not an arrival, a fixed setting.
Yeah.
It is a movement. It is constantly changing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and perhaps, there are so many geographic references. Geography, I mean, different types of places of the earth.
Mm-hmm.
Desert, you mentioned wilderness, we could say.
Mm-hmm.
Whole theology of the desert or the wilderness.
Pilgrimage,
You have rivers, water flowing. The idea of justice and righteousness are like this flowing stream. We touch one moment into that stream, but the stream is moving. We do not become the stream.
Mm-hmm.
We never understand that full movement, but we recognize parts.
Mm-hmm.
And then the mountain, that we go up to the hill. And maybe in a lesson like this, it's easy to focus on the mountain. So I appreciate you both mentioning, like the wilderness, the desert, these aspects, because they're all part of a bigger picture.
Mm-hmm.
And, I tend to love this imagery. I think, let's see, the verse in Psalm 125, that those who trust in the Lord are likened to a mountain that cannot be shaken. Mm. And there is something special, I think, Matilda, going back to your point about much of the Hebrew Bible being about journey, that sometimes we think about a mountain and we focus on arrival. You know, we like in the Western world to conquer something, to prove that we can climb to the top and view everything from the top. But you could say a hill or a mountain, there's just as much of this journey together of traversing that mountain as there is of being on the top.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, you know, I think the critique of many is well taken, that maybe we focus too much on being on the top of the mountain, right? We need to also reckon with what it means to be stuck in the wilderness, to be always maybe feeling like we're being run over by the river, not flowing with it, you know, like all of these different aspects. But what do you think of that simile, that those who trust in the Lord are likened to this mountain? What is it? What does that mean to say that those who trust in the Lord are like this mountain that will not be shaken?
I mean, earlier in the quarter, I mentioned this image of rock and dependability, which is very helpful to me in a world that we need to be affirmed, embraced, seen, heard, all these other things. All those are good things, are necessary things, constitutive things of what it means to be human. But the author, Richard Beck, which I quoted, said, but I'm still a mess. I mean, with all of these things being thrown at me, we all need, at the ground level of existence, dependence. We need to know that there's something reliable in this impermanent instability of what we call life outside and within the hidden life of our heart. So I like the image of this rock. It reminds, again, the psalmist mentions it frequently, of stability, that regardless of us, our covenant breaking, our covenant faithfulness, all of that shakes and is, you know, it withers. There are different seasons of that. This whole rock thing is about, again, this whole faith thing is much more about the stability that we have in God to carry us through our impermanent, unstable sort of existences. So I don't know. That's what I have in my mind when I think about that.
Made me want to say, okay, then what is the what is dependable? Is it the trust? Is it the relationship? Is it the fact that we're all, you know, on this journey and that there is a sense that of solidarity there, you know, that it's dependable? And one of the things that came to my mind as you were speaking, Tiago, is in connection to the idea of dependence. This is not connected to mountain imagery, but somehow it came to my mind as you were speaking, and it is that there are certain bodily functions that take care of themselves without our awareness, right? Our heart beats, we take a breath without consciously saying, oh, I'm going to take my next breath. I'm going to make sure my heart continues to pound. That is this dependability, right? This bedrock, a gift from Creator God that we could say. Well, thank you both, Matilda and Tiago, and also thank you to Ben Busby and Rick Basket, our program engineers, and to you for tuning in. For The Good Word, I'm Jody Washburn.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.